You are listening to the podcast of Providence Church in Austin, Texas. We hope this message raises your affections for Jesus and helps you live out the gospel in everyday life.
I want to tell you about something that happened in my life years ago. It was November of 1994, and it was a Wednesday evening. And I was at the movie with a friend. I had been married for 5 months, but my wife, Amy, was doing something else that evening. And so I was out at the movie, and I remember this moment really clearly. It was Shawshank Redemption. This was the movie I was watching. And it was right at the part of the movie where Andy Dufresne was about to break out of prison. Now, if that spoils the movie for you, I am sorry. All right, there is a spoiler, there's a limitation on spoiler alert. Best part of the movie, okay? So into it. I'm sitting there with my buddy, and all of a sudden, I feel this tap on my shoulder, and I look up, and it's a friend of mine. It's the husband of my wife's best friend, and he's like, "Hey, can you come to the back of the theater? I got to tell you something." And I'm like, "Dude, it's like best part of the movie. Can we just like wait 10 minutes here?" And he looked really serious, so I went with him to the back of the theater. When I got to the back of the theater, he was really sober, and he said, "Hey, I don't know how to tell you this, but Amy's dad was on a business trip in Singapore, and he had a heart attack in the shower, and he died." And I was like, "What?" And the whole way back to my apartment, all I kept saying to this guy was, "Man, this changes everything." I just kept saying that over. This changes everything. Because I knew I was not prepared, right? I knew I was not prepared to step into what I was about to step into as I stepped into my apartment. And that was my wife of 5 months wailing uncontrollably on the floor. I knew I was not prepared to tell my brother-in-law, her brother, who's 20 years old and a college student at the time, and he was on his way over there. I wasn't prepared to be the one to tell him that his father had suddenly died, but I was going to have to. And right before he came over, I froze up and had a breakdown. Just cried long and hard like I hadn't since I was a kid. I was not prepared to drive to Dallas later that evening and look my mother-in-law in the eye, this woman who just lost her husband of 25 years. So my father-in-law, Rick Thompson, had suddenly died of a heart attack at the age of 47, which is just 2 years older than I am right now. And we were not prepared. Now, one of the ways we were really not prepared is we were not prepared to grieve his loss. We had never grieved before like we were going to grieve then, because we'd never experienced death up close like that. We were not prepared to voice our sorrow. And one thing we began to find out is that others in our life were not either. Other friends in our life and family in our life were not prepared to grieve with us and to help us know how to grieve. Right? And so in the months and the weeks after Rick passed away, we began to notice that as it got further and further away, people would either say nothing to us, which was hurtful. It's kind of like, well, they're probably over it now. It's been like 6 months, right? Or they would say things that were just kind of platitudes. "He's in a better place. He's probably looking down on you right now," right? Which is really unhelpful. People just didn't know what to say. So my mother-in-law, Bev Thompson, who goes to Providence, you should meet her if you don't know her. She is not here today, but she said that in those months after she lost her husband, she would see people she knew, like at stores and stuff, and she would know that they saw her across the way, but they would kind of awkwardly kind of turn and go the other way because they didn't want to face her, right? Because in America, we do not like looking into the face of deep sorrow and deep grief, because it messes with our pursuit of happiness, doesn't it? It messes with our unspoken theology, or maybe spoken theology, that everything is going to work out. Everything will be fine, right? And that may be true. It may be fine someday, but the reality is it's not fine right now. Michael Card says that lament is the lost language in the life and the worship of the church. Meaning most of us don't know how to lament. Most of us don't know how to talk honestly about our sorrow, our pain, our grief, but also with hope. We don't know how to do it. And yet, when you read the Psalms, It's full of lament psalms. Did you know that over one-third of the psalms are lament psalms? How is it that we have lost touch with this great prayer language that's all over the Bible? On a typical Sunday, people show up, you know, Will mentioned this a second ago, people show up at church feeling all kinds of things. You may have showed up feeling glad today. You might have showed up feeling mad. You may have shown up feeling sad in some way. But chances are there are some of you who are struggling just to be here today. And like this, to put a smile on your face seems like the most fake thing that you would do, right? Singing an upbeat praise song right now, the thought of that just makes you want to like stab your eyes out, right? Because it just sounds terrible. So there's people struggling in here, and then we all know that the world is struggling out there. It's broken. It's in pain. There's oppression. There's injustice. There's hunger. There's poverty. There's sickness. There's death. How do we talk to God about this? How do we lament that which is truly lamentable? How do we give voice to our pain, our sorrow? How do we do that? What's the difference between lament and just kind of complaining, griping, doing what a friend of mine calls soul vomit, where you just kind of, bleh, just, I'm going to tell you everything I'm feeling. What's the difference between lament and those things? I think Psalm 13 is, it's probably the quintessential lament psalm. It's very instructive for us who have lost this language of lament. And I want you to see that Psalm 13 holds two things in tension, right? On the one hand, it says that there's great freedom in lament, tremendous freedom to lament. But on the other hand, there's some boundaries in lament. Right? You got to have both of these things to have true biblical lament, right? Freedom, boundaries. And I want to talk about those things for a minute, okay? Let's look at freedom first. Look at verses 1 and 2. Psalm 13, verse 1 and 2. The freedom that we have in lament. David says, "How long, O Lord?" See if you can pick up the theme of this psalm. "How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me?" Lament gives us the freedom to question God. How long? How long? How long? How long? Charles Spurgeon said that this psalm, that question is repeated so often, it sounds like the word howling. And that's really what this is. It's a howl. It's a wail. Do you hear the anguish in that question? Like on the surface, it looks like David's asking a question about time, but it's a rhetorical question, right? It's a rhetorical way of saying, man, I'm in pain here. I'm struggling. When I was a kid, I'd go on road trips, you know, with my family. And as a little kid, you know, like any little kid, I would always, over and over again, I'd be, how long do we get there? How long do we get there, right? Now, I did not really want to know an answer to that. It wasn't going to be helpful for me to hear, oh, we'll be there in like 7 hours, okay? That was not going to comfort me. What I was doing, I was leaning forward and talking to the higher powers, right, in the front seat and saying, hey, I'm back here in the back seat with my little sister and I'm dying back here, okay? It's awful. How long, okay? Can we please stop the car now? That's what David is doing. He's saying, I am dying here. Can we get out of this circumstance now, God? He's questioning God. He's questioning God's presence. He's questioning God's timing. He's questioning God's care, his ways, all of those things. In lament, you have the freedom to question God. Laments ask questions like this. Where are you, God? How long, God? Why, God? Those are fair questions to ask in lament. Lament also gives us the freedom to express ourselves, to fully express ourselves as it relates to what's wrong with the world. See, there's this gap. There's this gap between how we think things ought to be and how things really are. And lament rises out of that gap. And God actually gives us the freedom to express ourselves about the gap, right? So David is complaining here. It's a heartfelt, emotional, deeply felt complaint. And there's three aspects to his complaint. Look at it again. want you to notice how fully formed this complaint is. Verse 1, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long, O Lord, will you hide your face from me? So he feels abandoned by God, right? This is spiritual brokenness. God, why have you turned your shining face away from me? Why are you hiding from me? I mean, if you're there, it doesn't feel like it. And if you are there, it certainly doesn't feel like you're smiling on me. Spiritual brokenness. Look at verse 2. How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? He's heartbroken within. Like, this is psychological brokenness. I have deep pain and sorrow in my heart, God, not some of the time, all day long. I can't smile. It's relentless. Look at the end of verse 2. How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? He feels defeated by his enemies. This is social brokenness. He's saying, God, there are people who are against me, who are treating, they're my adversary. They're treating me unfairly. It feels like the unjust are always winning. How long? I feel helpless against them. The brokenness of the world that we just sang about in that song, The Fall, it's really complex. And David feels the complexity of it, right? Spiritual, social, psychological, physical. And his complaint kind of holds all those things together. In lament, you have the freedom to voice your complaint about the complex brokenness of the world. Like, it's okay to vent. It's okay to cry. It's okay to admit everything's not okay. I mean, somewhere along the way, I think this attitude developed that the Christian thing to do was just to suck it up, right? Like, at least outwardly, just suck it up. You know, put on the Ned Flanders smile, right? If you don't know who that is, you know, the fake, phony Christian smile. Everything is going to be okay. I had a coach, a football coach in high school, who was a really good guy. Really, he was probably my favorite coach that I ever had. But he had this thing that he would do whenever someone would get hurt in practice or in a game. He would always say the same thing. He would always say, "He's all right. He's all right. Get up, Todd. Come on, you're all right." That's what he would say. Well, one time during a game, this guy got hurt, and he was laying in the middle of the field, and other players from both teams started to huddle around him, and my coach came running out on the field. "He's all right. He's all right. Get up, Chris." Until he got to the huddle, and then he looked down, and he's like, "Oh." Because Chris had a compound fracture. He had a bone sticking out of his leg. He was not all right. It's not Christian to say things are all right when they're not all right. I don't know why we've ever got that thinking. Walter Brueggemann is an Old Testament scholar. He says that the church has largely stopped using lament psalms. And he said this had a couple of negative effects. First, it's caused us to put forward a false self. Like, before God and others, we present ourselves falsely. And then secondly, it's caused us to not really deal with evil and suffering and injustice in the world because we don't lament well. Listen to this. He writes this in one of his books on the Psalms. He says, "One loss that results from the absence of lament is the loss of genuine covenant interaction in our relationship with God. Since the second party of the covenant, that's us, has become voiceless or has a voice that is permitted to speak only in praise and doxology. Where lament is absent, covenant comes into being only as a celebration of joy and well-being. Or in political categories, the greater party, God, is surrounded by subjects who are always yes men and women, from whom never is heard a discouraging word." He says this doesn't square with reality. So covenant minus lament is a practice of denial, cover-up, and pretense. That means we're just pretending. You hear what he's saying? He's saying lament gives you great freedom in your relationship with God to be your true self, and to talk about the hurts and the brokenness of the world. If you don't lament, you're forfeiting that freedom. You're neglecting that freedom. So let me ask you, what makes you lament? Like, what causes grief and sorrow in your world, in your life. I was thinking about that this week in my own life, and I tried to lament some of those things according to Psalm 13. Here's a little bit of what I came up with. How long, O Lord? How long will human trafficking plague our world, where girls and women are held against their will and abused? How long will there be starvation and malnourishment in the world, where it's possible for a 14-year-old girl in Guatemala to weigh 40 or 50 pounds and fit in a baby crib? How long will there be loneliness among the elderly, people living out their last years in isolation, just longing for companionship? How long will people ridicule belief in you, God, when life is found in you? How long will I see so many of my close friends experience unfulfilled longings and desires, like the ache of wanting to get married or have children? How long will my old sin patterns haunt me? How long till there's no divorce? How long till there's no more bullying? How long till there's no more cancer and sudden heart attacks? How long, Lord? Are you lamenting the things in your life that are truly lamentable? Or are you just stuffing them, ignoring them, saying, like my coach, it'll be all right. It'll be okay. Don't neglect lament. You know what the Bible says about Jesus? He was a man of sorrows, well acquainted with grief. He wept at the death of a friend. He wept over the city of Jerusalem because he knew that those people there would deny him, not reject him as Messiah, and Jerusalem would one day be destroyed. He grieved over sin. He grieved over self-righteousness. He grieved over sickness. The only perfect heart that there ever was always breaking. You ever thought about that? And so to the extent that my heart and your heart grows to be more like the heart of Jesus, actually the more we will lament, because we'll become more aware of the great gap between how things are and how things ought to be. And the greater the gap, the greater the lament. So lament is actually just part of the Christian life. You have tremendous freedom in it. Don't neglect it. But I also want to mention the other side of the tension. I want to mention the boundaries. Right, you're free to do it, but there's boundaries, okay? Look at verse 3. Lament is not simply this free, unfettered expression of my autonomous self where I'm just like, that's me, right? That's not what lament is. Lament always has a context. Who has David been crying out to here? The Lord. All caps, L-O-R-D in all caps. That's the name Yahweh or Jehovah. It's the personal name of the one true God. He's crying out to him. But watch what he says in verse 3. He says, consider and answer me, O Lord, Yahweh, my God. My God. He's saying, I'm not just praying to the mysterious, unknown, unnamed, energy, force, whatever God out there. I'm praying very specifically to Yahweh. That's his name, and he is my God. There's a relationship there. And lament, biblical lament, can only happen in the context of relationship. It's a covenant relationship. It's a bonded relationship where God has said to his people, I'll be your God, and you'll be my people, right? Lament happens within the bounds, the boundaries of that kind of relationship. So you don't have the freedom to express yourself just for the sake of expressing yourself. Right? Because lament does not terminate in you, in self. Lament doesn't end in self. Lament terminates or ends in God. We don't lament autonomously, and this is actually really good news. Michael Card says, biblical lament is not complaint that goes nowhere, like just complaining into the air. It's the people of God planting seeds of hope in the soil of exasperation and despair, expecting the Lord will come through in the end. Lament, he says, is not about psychology. It's not about just getting stuff off our chest. Lament is about true worship, offering up as a sacrifice your brokenness and your pain to God. So you see, lament is a cry, but it's a directional cry. We cry out to God because our laments are bound up in Him. He is the boundary of our lament. So right after David cries out his lament, his questions, watch what happens in verses 3 and 4. He makes a request. He asks God to move. He asks God to work in the world on his behalf. Look at verse 3 and 4. He says, "Consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. Illumine me, enlighten my eyes. I don't want to die. Lest my enemy say, I have prevailed over him. Don't let him defeat me, Lord. Lest my foes rejoice because I am shaken." Do you see how bold David is being here? He's speaking in the imperative. It's almost like he's commanding God. Consider me, God. Answer me, O God. It's almost like God is obligated to him. The reason is because God is obligated to him. God has obligated himself to David in covenant and said, "You are my son, I'm with you." So the lament doesn't just cry out to God about a broken world. It asks, it requests, it says, "God, hey, look over here. My life is a mess. The world is a mess. Do something." But then it goes on. Look at verse 5 and 6. Look at the culmination of lament. It's a vow to trust God. It's a vow to praise God. Verse 5 and 6. "But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord." Why? Because he has dealt bountifully for me. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing that in 5 verses, David has gone from the depths of just despair to singing? Like from just being on the floor, wailing before God, to praising. Isn't that amazing? You read that and you say, well, how does that work? How does that happen? I think the key is in that phrase in verse 5 that says, "I have trusted in your steadfast love." Because what did God promise to his people? What did God promise to the people who trusted in him and said, "You're my God"? He promised his steadfast love, right? His loyal love, his unfailing love, his unshakable, unending, infinite, unlimited love. And he said, that's what you get as my people. And David said, that's what I'm trusting in. I have a friend who grew up in a Christian home, and he experienced the love of God just as a kid, early in his life, like we want all of our kids to do. But as a young man, my friend went through unspeakable tragedy, pain, loss, difficulty in his life. And he found himself not being able to reconcile what he understood the Bible to teach with the pain and the suffering that he was going through. And he realized he'd never been prepared to lament the complex brokenness of the world, especially when it intersected his life. And so my friend decided, I'm gonna reject the faith, right? I'm gonna attempt to live as a non-Christian, even though I've been a Christian. This is what happened, and this is what he found out when he tried that. These are his words. He said, "I found myself plagued not with the problem of evil and suffering, but with the problem of love. It was easier to admit the plausibility of evil in a personal theistic universe than to understand the love I had experienced so poignantly in my childhood arising from an impersonal universe. Attempting to try on this impersonal universe, meaning a universe without God, led to the pain of explaining the amazing love that I had experienced as a child." In other words, a universe without God could never have produced the love he had tasted in his life. See what's going on there? He could not shake the unshakable love of God. That is the steadfast love of God. And that's what David is trusting in here. In hard times, God does not promise to wave a magic wand and take away our grief and sorrow. He doesn't. He does not promise to take away the cancer. He does not promise to take away the unemployment. He can and he might, but he does not promise it, right? But he does promise his steadfast love. He doesn't promise to fulfill our every longing and desire right now. He will someday, but he doesn't promise it right now. But he does promise his steadfast love and his presence with us. Through the pain, he's with us. So that's the difference between despair, right, and lament. Despair is crying out into an impersonal universe hopelessly. Lament is crying out to the one true God, and our lament is bound up in him, right? Lament does not lead us to a, you know, just a black hole of suffering. Lament leads us to the light, to the one who can give us hope. On the cross, Jesus actually lamented. He cried out the words of Psalm 22. You know them. He asked a question. He said, my God, why? Why have you forsaken me? Why have you turned your face away from me? Why have you stopped smiling on me? And in that moment, we could say that Jesus experienced the utter hell of not experiencing the steadfast love and presence of God. He was truly forsaken. So as Jesus died on the cross for sin, God turned away. He would not look at that sin, and Jesus died there, utterly forsaken. But you and I know that's not the end of the story. We know that he was also resurrected. He overcame death. He overcame the brokenness of the world. The enemy did not prevail. He was raised from the dead. And in Jesus, we can have our eyes enlightened, illumined, so that we would not sleep the sleep of death. In Jesus, we can experience the steadfast love and the presence of God, even in the midst of this complex, broken world that breaks our heart all the time, right? My mother-in-law, Bev Thompson, she told me about this particular day in the weeks after she lost her husband. And it was the day that all the family and friends went home. Right, you know, people come in, a tragedy like this, people come in, are with her, helping her. But she told me about the day that they all left. And all of a sudden, she was in her house, all by herself, all alone, for the first time. And she said, I went down in the middle of the living room, sobbing, and I couldn't stop sobbing. And she told me, it was kind of weird, though. I had this experience where all of a sudden, I felt this strange, like the presence of God. And she was like, all I wanted to do was stay on the floor. And for some reason, it felt like he was actually grabbing me by the collar and lifting me up and whispering in my ear all the blessings that he had given in my life. And so I felt divided. I wanted to stay on the floor, but part of me was just hearing all the blessings that reflected God's love, really, in my life. And I thought, I can't stay there. I can't stay on the floor. And it's almost like God lifted her off the floor. And she said, in that moment, I thanked God. And I praised him in the midst of my grief, and I thought I could never, ever, ever do that. See, God did not make her situation all better, magic wand. He didn't take away the grief and the sorrow. He never brought her husband back, right? But he was with her in the grief, and he loved her in the midst of it. That's the promise that we have in lament. Until Jesus returns and sets all things right, that's the promise that we have now, right? I want to encourage you, if you've never done this before, to maybe spend some time in lament this week. Maybe use Psalm 13 or another lament psalm like Psalm 22. You might use this devotional card that's here. And just practice lamenting according to this psalm. Like, ask yourself, what makes me feel sorrow? What do I grieve over? About my life, about the world, maybe both. And just spend time lamenting. Cry out to God, make requests of God, turn to God and trust and in praise. Within the bounds of your covenant relationship with the one true God, freely express yourself. All right? Let's pray.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Providence Church. For more resources and info, visit us online at www.providenceaustin.com.